In the past couple of weeks we've been talking about the problem. This week we'll talk about the solution. Just to cause over a couple of points. We're doing the sugya of legs. We got on the topic of legs because we're talking about the legs of the statue that Nebuchadnezzar saw in his dream. And it's the legs are the most vulnerable part of the body. And that's why in his dream he saw a stone come out of the statue, hit the statue in the legs, and the statue came down. This dream of Nebuchadnezzar is happening today. His dream, the Mara Nevuah, the Ke'e Mara Nevuah, the heavenly vision that Nebuchadnezzar saw is being described today. Rabbi Moshe Shlita explained there's a difference between hands and feet. Hands could function independently of one another. You know, one hand could be rubbing the stomach and the other hand could be tapping your head on top. That's how I got accepted into TJ. To do that. But hands could, you know, one hand could be active and the other one could be passive, or they could be doing two separate things at the same time. They're not dependent on each other. They could assist each other. You could use one hand to help the other hand, you know, when you're shooting a basket. Yeah, so if you're a righty, so the right hand is the power, and the left hand is the aim. But they're not tied to each other. And Rachman Litzlan, if somebody can't use one of his hands, he can still use the other hand fully. Legs are not like that. If someone only has one leg, it's as if he has none. He can't walk with one leg. Or there's artificial means, but one leg, walking and even standing, requires two legs. The two legs are the relationship between the right leg and the left leg. They're codependent, and that means the one without the other are totally are useless, almost useless. I'm saying almost useless, and that tells us something. You know, we saw the Medrash says that the head, the Reisha Dedahava, the head of gold, the Nebuchadnezzar saw in his dream. So that is Malchus Bavel. That was Nebuchadnezzar himself. Then there's two arms, that's Paras and Mada. Paras and Mada are two arms. Paras is a Memshala, it's Persia. And mother is media, Persian media. The two arms, they joined together and they toppled the Babylonian Empire, but they didn't have to do that. Paras could function by itself, Persian dynasty, without mother. Mother could do well on its own. They chose to join together. So once the right arm, once the left arm. Yavin's the body. And then you have two legs. So one of the legs is Rome, Edom. And this is what we talked about. These are the four umais. Bavel, followed by Paras and Madai, Yavan, and Rome in chronological order, from the head until the feet. But there's two legs. Who's the other leg? The other leg is Yishmael. Yishmael is not one of the four kingdoms. Yishmael is on his own. When the Maral explained, look at Chazarov, what we learned from the Maral, that you don't have five nations. Yishmael is not a fifth nation. Yishmael is on his own. Because of all the nations, Yishmael is the only one, besides Klal Yisrael, Yishmael is the only one that has the rights to rule. Because Avraham Avinu davened to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he said, Lu Yishmael Yichye Lefanecha. He davened to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Yishmael should have a chelik. And Avraham Avinu davened, Hashem answered him, and gave Yishmael the right to rule. So all the other nations, Bavel, Paras and Madai, Yavan, and even Rome, they don't have the right to rule. They don't have an independent you know, they don't have blue blood running through their veins. You have people from the royal family. Supposedly, if you cut them, blue blood comes out instead of red blood. I never tried it. But they have noble blood. The fire of kings is coursing through their veins, whatever that means. I don't even know what that means. Don't try it at home or even or here or anywhere. Just don't try it. There's a certain ability. There's a certain ability that people recognize in a king. That the king, he doesn't just rule, he has the right to rule. He has something in his very makeup that people are going to follow. And Klal Yisrael has that. And Babel does not have it. There's no reason why anybody would follow a Babylonian. He just doesn't have what it takes. Neither a Babylonian, someone from Parasu Madai, someone from Yavan, or someone from Edom. They don't have what it takes. So how did they... You know, if someone is not born into the royal family, if someone doesn't have a noble bearing, he doesn't have a regal bearing, he doesn't have the ability of leading, so how do you become a king? There is no way to become a king, because you're not a king. There's only one way to become a king, and that's to steal it from somebody else. So that's what Babel did. He amassed a large force, and he conquered Eretz Yisrael, Yerushalayim. He conquered Yehuda, Binyamin, Shevet Levi, and their kings. Yehuda is a king. And Babel conquered Yehuda. So where's the Malchus of the world? The Malchus of the world is in Babel now. So people look up to Babel as rulers of the world because Babel conquered and captured the rulers of the world. And if you could do that, then we're going to respect that. And the world respected it because they absorbed the Malchus, the ones that are true rulers, until the Persians came along. And they made a whole war. And they defeated the Babylonians. And they conquered the entire world. The Persians and the Medians. And they took the Bnei Yisrael by them. They brought them to Shushan and Bira. So now they have the Malchus of the world. And they rule the world. The Babylonians, they don't rule anymore. Because they only ruled by virtue of the fact that they had Klal Yisrael by them. The minute Klal Yisrael leaves, they don't rule anymore. And so too with Alexander the Great. Chazal say b'feirush, Alexander the Great, his hatzlacha, he attributed his hatzlacha in war to Klal Yisrael, more specifically to Shimon HaTzadik. He conquered the world because of Klal Yisrael. And that time... So each one of those nations, they don't have their own internal ability to rule anybody or to rise up above people and be royal. Yeah, someone that's royal is higher. That's why they sit on that high chair, because they're higher. They're not higher. They don't have the nobility of spirit. They're not higher. They're ganavim. And as soon as the Gneva goes out of the Rishus, they lose Klal Yisrael, and they also lose the Malucha. And this is something which we saw time and time again. There was something called the Holy Roman Empire. It's not very holy, it's not much of an empire, maybe it's Roman. Maybe out of the three. The Holy Roman Empire, the entire Europe was under the auspices of the Holy Roman Empire. Germany, Austria, Hungary, all these countries we didn't even have names for. Prague, Czechoslovakia, I don't think it was called Czechoslovakia, but Russia, parts of Russia, France, the Holy Roman Empire, there was an emperor. And all the Jews in the world lived in his empire. And they were driven out. And the empire fell. You had the Spanish Empire, Spain. You're part Spanish, right? Mexican.
No, Spanish.
Spanish. You're part Spanish. The Spanish Armada ruled the seas. They conquered far-flung places. You're talking about Curacao, Costa Rica, the Granada, the Falkland Islands. I mean, they're America, South America, Peru, Brazil. They ruled the world. The Jews were in Spain at the time. the rulers of the world were in Spain. So the Spanish ruled the world because they had the kings of the world by them. And they had the power to conquer, the power to rule. They drove them out in 1492. When was the last time you ever heard of the Spanish Empire? And so on and so forth. It's hard to call, America is like the last superpower. Sort of hard to call what's going on in America now a superpower. You had Sirita Sedaris and superpowers. But that's the Makom where Klal Yisrael is. Klal Yisrael is in America. I mean, the Israel is America. The entire Israel. And I don't mean the state. The Yishuv. The ability of Yidden to inhabit and to stay here on Pidach HaTava is from America. And it proves over and over and over again. You know, they just had the vote in the United Nations. And the vote was whether, you know, to put a deadline on when Klal Yisrael has to leave parts of Eretz Yisrael. Without, you know, irregardless of the progress of negotiations, by the year 2017, they have to go. You have to leave. There might be certain areas that will be allowed to stay in by the United Nations, but no one's decided exactly what those places are yet. You know, they call Harnof occupied territories. Settlers. Just saying, this is, you know, this is real stuff that's going on. And came into a shul in Harnof and they killed four tzaddikim and wounded a few others. That they should be zechut to a full shleimah, they're still fighting for their lives. And the way they parlayed it, the way they publicized it was disputed territory. This was, yes, of course, this is the big IFA Yisrael CNN networks. That Arabs, that two residents of Yerushalayim were killed in an incident in disputed territory. That's the way they say these things. We're in disputed territory. A shul in Harnof is a disputed territory. And that's all a sermon. We can't look at things from down here. That's a sermon that our ability to hold on to the land is disputed. It is disputed territory because the Ribbono Shel Olam himself is disputing it. It's not disputed territory because the Arabs are disputing us our rights to it. The Ribbono Shel Olam is disputing our rights to it. Stark Golus. Very stark Golus. And, you know, we find that the Shluchim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the United States of America. The Jews live there. And they're Melech, and they rule. If you can call what they do now ruling, but yeah. I mean, Shvachamaisis, you know? It is Shvachamaisis because they no longer rule economically. China rules economically. They no longer rule militarily because nobody's afraid of them because they don't have any backbone. Nobody wants to get involved in anything. But until now they did. They got the Malchus from Klal Yisrael. Yishmael does not get the Malchus from Klal Yisrael. Yishmael is the son of a king. Avraham Avinu was a king. They proclaimed him a king. All the nations of the world proclaimed Avraham a king. Eimek HaMelech, Sham Himlichu Aleihem. They had a coronation ceremony. Avraham Avinu is the king. He prayed to Kadosh Baruch Hu that Yishmael should inherit, should be considered his son. Yishmael should be the son of the king. Yishmael has an advantage over Esav because the Torah says, Ki bi Yitzchak yikara l'chazara. Part of Yitzchak will be considered your continuity. Be Yitzchak means be Yitzchak v'loy b'chol Yitzchak. Be Yitzchak means miktsas Yitzchak. Ki be Yitzchak yikar l'chazara. The only part of Yitzchak is going to be part of this continuum. Yaakov Avinu is a continuation of Yitzchak. Esav is not. In a certain bechina, he's not Yitzchak's son. But Yishmael is 100% of Avraham Avinu's son. He is. So he's a melech on his own, and he doesn't have to conquer Klal Yisrael in order to rule. One leg is Edom, that's the Christianity, European culture. And the other leg is Yishmael, that's the Muslims. And that's the bottom of this statue. It's at the end, the Akos HaYamim. It's going in chronological order. First Babel, Parasamada, Yavan, Edom, then Yishmael. What we're seeing today are the two legs that are working together with each other. Edom and Yishmael should be mortal. They should be mortal enemies. Presbyterian Church divested their interests from any corporation that's doing business with the State of Israel because of the way the Israelis reacted in Operation Cast Lead against the Gazan civilians. The Presbyterian Church is supporting Muslims against Israel. Do you have any idea how many Christians were killed by Muslims? By the very same Muslims that the Israelis were defending themselves against? It's ludicrous. Christians are supporting fundamentalist Muslims. They're trying to divest themselves so as not to support in any way the Israeli economy. Because if they invest in Israel, it gives the Israelis the ability to defend themselves against fundamentalist Muslims. You know what fundamentalist Muslims do to Christians? They kill Christians. I mean, the percentages, the Bethlehem is under the authority of the Palestinian Authority. Kfar Rachel is still under the authority of the State of Israel. It's a little strip there. And if you learned Mesachus Gittin, the Gemara talks about a Ritzua Yaitse, there's like a little Ritzua there. So there's a little Ritzua by Kfar Rachel, but Bethlehem is under the authority of the auspices of the Palestinian Authority. Before it was handed over to the Palestinian Authority, when it was under Israeli control. It means that Muslims, Arabs lived there, and the Israelis policed it. It was under, you know, the army. It was under Israeli control. It was 90% Christian. It's Bethlehem. Who lives in Bethlehem? Christian Arabs. Arab Christians. And now it's like down to 10%. Where'd they go? You know, the Palestinian Authority comes in, they're in charge. They're Muslims. Where'd they go? Well, some of them left, some of them were killed, some of them nobody knows, they're gone. So these are Nisim. They're not pleasant Nisim, but these are Nisim. That the right leg is helping the left leg, that means that the statue could walk, because legs that don't help each other are useless. You need two legs to walk. One leg, so that Yishmael and Edom are coming together and now the statue could walk. And that's really scary. And what we're seeing is that Edom is willing to support their mortal enemy Yishmael, even though they hate them and they kill each other out. They're willing to do it because of one reason. They know that if they support Yishmael, Yishmael will kill more Jews. So it's worth it for them. France voted in the United Nations to force Israel to a timetable to return the territories captured in the 67 war. France is supporting Muslims, fundamentalist Muslims. France, the biggest problem that they're facing now is that they're country is filled with fundamentalist Muslims. They are so xenophobic about it. They're like Islamophobia. France, they like, that is like the national malady is Islamophobia. They're so terrified of Muslims taking over the country. They don't allow them by law to dress like Muslims in public and in schools. It's like they have all these laws against them, and France is supporting fundamentalist Muslims in their goal of establishing a Palestinian state, another one of these states, and taking away from territory from the state of Israel without negotiations. What are they thinking? France. Who's the ones that voted against it? Two countries. Which two countries voted against it? Do you know? The United States of America and Canada. And they didn't win because of that. I think there were like 8 votes for it. They needed 9. They didn't get it. Because they got 8 for it, 2 against. And I think they had like 6 abstentions. 2 of the abstentions were Rwanda and Nigeria. And Nigeria was supposed to vote for it, the plan. They gave assurances to Abu Mazza. Oh, he's a peace-loving individual. They gave assurances to him that they're going to vote for it, and then they switched at the last minute. So we got saved by Nigeria. Does that make sense? Not by France. England, they abstained. They didn't even vote for us. They couldn't have the guts. England! They created the state of Israel. They didn't have the guts to vote for us. They abstained. France voted against us, and we were saved by Nigeria. Does that make sense? What's who? Does that make any sense? He wants to go again next month in January because the Security Council, they rotate, so there's different members. So he wants to have another vote in a month. That also doesn't make... Why should the United Nations let a guy keep doing that? Every month you lost! Goodbye! You know? But no, he wants to... The Chevron, he wants to have another vote because there's new members. And this time he might get the 9 votes. So I just saw that France told him that that's like a provocation. It's not in the interest of peace for him to do that. France, listen, man, listen, Mr. Frenchie. if you held, it's not an interest to do it, so why'd you vote for it? Oh. There's no seichel. They're flip-flopping. There's no seichel. You're for it, you're against it. It's something, there's no mensch seichel to this. It's totally, the right leg is coming together with the left leg. That's the Nevuah of Nebuchadnezzar is current events. So we're talking about this big Nisayan. The Nisayan of the legs. The Nisayan of the legs is that we're living in a world not only where it's, number one, it's hard to be a righteous person because you see bad things happening to righteous people. Number two, it's even more, it's compounded by the fact that you see good things happening to bad people. And the sum total of those things, this is what we said, it's very chomer, is that it looks like a Kadosh Baruch Hu is leading us to be bad. If a Kadosh Baruch Hu is running the world, and a Kadosh Baruch Hu makes it attractive, and he gives atzlacha to Rishayim, Hashem gives atzlacha to the ones that view the world just as this world. Hashem gives a tzlacha to the ones that drive God out of the world. So the Kadosh Baruch Hu is leading us down that path. So when the world looks like Hashem wants us to be like the rest of the world, that if you study world events, if you study the things that are unfolding, so then it has the appearances of a Kadosh Baruch Hu is actually urging us be like everyone else. because trying to be unique and special isn't working. So then every person asks themselves, what does Hashem want from me? The suffering you can put up with, as long as you convince it's the, you know, that's, you can put up with suffering if you convince it's the right thing to do. But how do you put up with suffering when you start questioning whether it's even worth it, because you might be suffering for something which is totally false? It's very difficult, if not impossible, to put up with your torture. You know, they play with people's minds when they torture them, when secret agents torture people. They play with people's minds. They say, you might as well tell us, because your people don't care about you. They gave up on you. They denied you even exist. You're never going to see the light of day. You're going to lose anyway. They play with your mind. Because you're willing to submit to torture if it's worth it. But if they're going to get it anyway, they'll get it in 2 days from now. Or if you're going to lose the war, if the information you have is going to be irrelevant, so it's like, so then why should you torture yourself for nothing? Tzadik v'ra'loi is an assignment that we've always been able to bystand because it's worth it to suffer, because we're convinced it's the right thing. But the moment you have doubts whether it's the right thing or not, because it's so attractive to be like them, and not only is it attractive to be like them, Hashem is making it attractive, and Hashem is giving them that slacha. When they, you know, they try to spread their ideology, it spreads. So then why should we torture ourselves for nothing? Hashem doesn't want us to torture ourselves. He wants us to enjoy life. He wants to be like them. It's very hard. And you know, and there's levels in this. And Chas v'Shalom, not everyone is going to go off the derech because of this. Let's hope not. I mean, we haven't. So far, we're still holding on. A very small spark still holding on. But there's something called Briris Amunah and Chayzik Amunah, that we could say we believe in God, and we could say it and we mean it, but there's depth to Amunah. And can we say that we believe in God to the point we have no doubts whatsoever? It's hard. And we're Maminim, B'nai Maminim. But we have questions, and the questions, they're part of our makeup. So we believe, we do believe. You know, the best example of this is Noach. Hashem told Noach he's going to bring a flood. It's going to rain. Get into the boat. Save yourself. And then Hashem, the day came for it to come, and Noach didn't go into the Teva until it rained. He waited until the rain came down. So Rashi says, Noach is from Ketanei Ha'amana. Ketanei means katan. He's like a miniature Maimon, something small about his Amunah. He's not a huge Baal Amunah, he's something small about his Amunah. Maimon ve'ena Maimon, he believes and he doesn't believe. Yes, Noach, you believe there's going to be a flood? 100%. Will you scream it from the rooftops? Yes, I will. So why are you waiting until the rains to go in? He said, well, I want to wait until it actually starts. That's called Maimon. He believes, but ain't a Maimon. He also doesn't believe. So this can't help but affect us. What's the solution? Okay, so we have three parallels that we're going to discuss simultaneously. You have Yaakov fighting with the Malach. You have the Hashmonaim. And you have us. So we'll start with Yaakov and the Malach. So we're fighting the same battle three times. The battle of Yaakov fought with the Malach was the first time. The Hashmonaim with Yavon was the second time. And us is the third and final time. And we're going to win. Klal Yisrael is going to win. At the end of the Muhammad the Malach, how do you fight with the Malach? What do you do with the Malach? One thing we do know, at the end, when you beat someone in a fight, so what do you tell him? You say, cry uncle, right? Say uncle. No, say uncle. No, I'm not letting you up until you say uncle. I'm not saying it. Okay, you're going to stay here the rest of your life. You can stand out until you say uncle. Finally. Okay, I'll say uncle. You let him up. So Yaakov's fighting with the Malach. He beat the Malach. The Malach wants to go, and Yaakov says, I'm not letting you up until you call me Yisrael. Say Yisrael. No. Say Yisrael. No. I gotta go. I have to go to say Shira. You know, it's my turn to say Shira. Once in my lifetime. No, you gotta say Yisrael. I don't have time to say Yisrael. I gotta go say Shira. If I don't say Shira, they're not gonna let me say it again. I'm gonna lose my slot. Say Yisrael. No! So finally, you said Yisrael. And then Yaakov, you know, said, I'll say Yisrael. When you get to base kill and you make a mizbeach over there, and a Kaddish Baruch Hu calls Yisrael, I'll be there. Said, wait until you get to base kill. No, 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 Yaakov. You say it now. You say it here. You say it now. We're not waiting to base kill. You say it now. He says, Yisrael, what was so important about that? The answer is in the name Yisrael itself. The name Yisrael is Malchus, Sar. Sin Reish is a Sar. Nobility. It's the Malach of Esav being made to Yankiv that he's higher than him. You're the Malach. We're the Ganovim. But the Malach could only say that to Yaakov if Yaakov really was that. So it means his Muhammad with the Malach was whether he was that or not. Okay, this is what the Muhammad was. They weren't punching each other out. The Malach was trying to convince Yaakov that he's just like everybody else. And the Malach was trying to prove it from Yaakov's chisrainus. You ever know when somebody wants to do character assassination or emotional surgery on you? You ever had that done to you? Well, some parents are very good at destroying their children that way, you know. Pointing out all the chisrainus and then highlighting it and then exaggerating, you know. You are a total failure. You never do anything right. Never. Could destroy a child that way. That's what the Malach was doing with Yaakov. He's trying to find every little chink in his armor, every single thing he ever did wrong or thought wrong, or any little character flaw. And Yaakov was fighting back. He said, I'm not perfect, but I'm higher. He said, I might not be perfect, but I'm higher. Perfection in this world is very difficult. But I'm nobility, I'm royal. You know why? Not because of me. Not because of me as an individual. Because I am the creator of a nation called Yisrael. The name Yisrael is Yaakov's name as a father of a nation. The name Yaakov is Yaakov as an individual. He's Yaakov. He's a person. His name is Yaakov. He's an individual. The name Yisrael means that he only identifies as the father of a nation. The name Yisrael means that Hashem created a nation. The nation is going to be perfect. There's no guarantee that each and every member of this nation is going to be perfect. There are going to be people. They're going to be Rishayim. But the nation as a whole is going to be exactly what Hashem wants it to be. And if somebody's missing something, another person's going to complement what he's missing. That's what nations are. Nations could be perfect. Because even though individuals can't, but nations could complement each other. So this person didn't do all the mitzvahs. That person did the mitzvahs that you're missing. The sum total of the nation together is exactly what Hashem wants. He said, I'm above. I'm Yisrael. I'm not an individual. It's not about me. You can point out the shortcomings that I have, and there are some shortcomings, but it's not about me. I don't exist for myself. I exist for a higher purpose. I exist to form a nation of people to come together as one unit in order to be exactly what Hashem wants us to be. We stand for God. We might not be perfect, but we stand for God, and we're above, and we are kings, and we're malachim. And he won. That's called victory. The time of the Chashmonaim, Tzadik V'Ralei and Rashi V'Tavlei, it's a Nisayim. It's a Nisayim when you see that the Rishayim are having Hatzlacha. It's a Nisayim when you see that Tzadikim are suffering at the same time the Rishayim are having Hatzlacha. But that's only if you're looking at the world through events. Tzadik v'Rala is an event. Rasha v'Tovla is an event. Something good happened to a Rasha. Something bad happened to a Tzadik. They're individuals. You can look at the world through Pratim. Pratim is breaking it down into segments, sections. There is this person who exists under these Mr. Tzadik, a Rav Agana Tzadik, and this incident happened to him and made his life miserable. You have this person, a Rasha, and this thing happened to him and made him the happiest person in the world. If you look at it, look at it as slices, individual slices, so then you're losing one perspective. There's a master plan. Hashem, we said, Hashem could, what looks to you like a tzlacha for a Rasha, is the Rasha's demise. It's his self-destruction. Because Hashem is giving him all of the reward for anything he did in this world, in this world. So what looks like a tzlacha is really destruction. What looks like Yisur and Tzar to a Tzadik is really the greatest bracha. Now you can't see that. I'm just saying, we can learn this and can hear it in a shir, and you can hear these words. But when you look at the tzaddik suffering, you don't see it. You don't see bracha. Okay? It's there's so many things in this world, so many tzaras in this world, that you cannot see bracha in those things. Could you see bracha in a baby being tossed into the air and being caught on the spear of a bayonet? Could you see bracha in that? Yeah, it's bracha, it's good. You can't see it. You can't see it. Could you see punishment in Titus, who was the biggest Russian in the world? The general conquered the entire world, he became the emperor. And all the Rishayim HaSharurim that they killed out the Sarug and Malchus and they got away with it, that they were able to kill Rabbi Shmuel Kayan Gadol, who had the kayak to say the Shem and go up to Shemayim and ask Kadosh Baruch Hu what's doing, and the Russia, the Kesa was able to kill him. Oh, that's really self-destruction. You can't see self-destruction when you see Rishayim are succeeding. You can't see it. You can't see it if you're looking at the Russia. If you're looking at the Russia. If you're looking at what happened to him. So what do? We don't look at the Russia. We don't look at the Tzaddik. We don't look at ourselves. We're not individuals. The bad thing that happened to the Tzaddik, the tzaddik is not alone. He's part of a nation. And you can't look at what happens to him. You have to look at what happens to all of Klal Yisrael together. It's part of a puzzle. The bad thing, you can't just look at what happens, a bad thing that happens to a righteous person. That's only seeing a part of it. What you have to do, and this is like amazing, is you have to look at what happens to every single Yid, and put all the things that happened to all the Yidden throughout all the generations since there were Yidden, back to Adam and Rishon, and take everything that happened to every single Yid from then until now, which is talking about people beyond number, and try and fit those all the things that happened to them into one big puzzle that it all makes sense. That's the only way you can view things. You have to look at it like Yisrael. Now that's impossible, right? That's impossible. I mean, it's impossible. If you want to understand why something good happens to a Russian, something bad happens to a Tzaddik, you can only understand it with all the information. And all the information is to view what happens to everyone in Klal Yisrael. Because you're gonna make an assessment based on what happens to somebody's toe. You understand what I'm saying? So guys, You can understand the whole person because of what happened to his toe. Or he has a hangnail. Or he got stung by a mosquito. And then you're going to... Oh, what a terrible, terrible, terrible life. One part of the person got stung by a mosquito. The other part of the person didn't get stung by a mosquito. You have to take it all in perspective, all of Klal Yisrael together. You basically have to leave the world in order to understand the world. And the Chasam Raim did that. You cop? The Chasam Raim did that. The way, you know, it looked like a Kaddish Baruch is being made to the Rishayim. But they saw that what really is going on is the Rishayim being made to a Kaddish Baruch. And all the success of the Yevanim was their destruction. And the Chasam Raim saw that. And since they saw that, Hashem gave them the power to carry it out. I mean, first they saw it. They saw that all the power of the Yevanim, that's really destruction. And Hashem said, okay, if you could see that, then you could actually carry it out and you'll destroy them. If you could see it. That means they were able to look at things beyond human understanding. It's, you know. That's why in Chanukah we say, Kedei Lahaydis Lahala. So now we get to our Mechama. You know, we live in a world when something goes good for us, we had a good day. Things went smooth. I'm talking about in every area. So we go, oh, that's a good day. And when something bad happens, or it's rough, so it's a bad day. That's treif. The definition of a good day and a bad day is not what happened to you or what didn't happen to you. Definition of a good day and a bad day is how much you contributed to what a Kaddish Baruch Hu's view of the world is. It's not about you. I'm even talking about mitzvah observance. Some people, their mitzvah observance, they focus on themselves. Our nisayin, our mochama, is to see everything that's happening now. There's tremendous hatzlacha for Rishayim. I remember there were tkufas. The terrorists would plant bombs and the only people they blew up were themselves. There were miracles on a steady basis. I don't know if it was daily, but it was like, yeah. They planted a bomb by the Kosel. And they planted it for the time when people would be davening Mincha, but the stupid Arabs didn't realize that each week it's like 8 minutes later. So they planted at a time, the same time that davening was the week, they staked out the place the week before, and then they came back the next week, and then they blew up, and there was no one there. It was like, you know, and everyone said, yeah, it's stupid Arabs. And the lady went into Machane Yehuda, and she went into the bath. There's a bathroom somewhere, a public restroom in Machane Yehuda. And she blew herself up in the bathroom. This is Kesader! It's not happening anymore. It's Rosh Vatayvle. That'd be Metzliach. It was just a... You know, I read these reports. You never know how true they are. But last month they arrested two Arabs. And they didn't publicize what they arrested them for. So they just released why they arrested them. You know there's a Chasna Hall, no few Yerushalayim? Mm-hmm. You've been to Chasna's there. I've been to plenty of them. Yosef Lewinson got married there. You went to his Chasna? You remember someone were there?
Yeah.
I think Rabbi Greenwald's, Ellie got married there. Yeah, no few Yerushalayim. So one of these Arabs, he did a job there. I mean, he didn't work there on a regular, but he didn't work for no few Yerushalayim. But there was a caterer at an event there once, and he was part of the crew they brought in. So he knew the place. They were staking it out. And they were caught staking it out, Baruch Hashem. And it was discovered that they had bought two submachine guns. They know who they bought them from already. They paid like $50,000 for the submachine guns. and they were going to dress like Haredim. They found them with the... They were going to dress like Haredim. They were going to go into the wedding, just walk in, and they were going to spray the people with automatic weapons. And they caught them when they were staking it out. It's Pacha Pachadim. And this is, and to see this as their destruction is very hard. There's only one way to see this as the destruction. And it's to get out of the mindset that you're an individual. We're not Yaakov or Yisrael. We're not Yaakov or Yisrael. If you're looking at things from your point of view, what's good for you, what's not good for you, what's happened to you, what happened around you, I could have been, you know, the first thing you think of when you hear this story is, I could have been there when it happened, right? I was almost there. You know, first thing you think of is, I could have been in that wedding hall when it happened. The way to see things from another, from a point of another world. How do you see things from another world? When I go into another world, look down on this world, is to get past yourself. The events don't have to conform to me. I have to conform to the events. This is reality. This is what Hashem is giving us. And I mean, there's a lot to talk about. And Derech Haveda, if something doesn't go good, so instead of saying something bad happened to you, if it happened, then it was Hashem's Ratzon that it happened, and you have to work with it. If something, you know, something bothers you, something's not going well with you, so instead of complaining about it, say, if this happened to me, if these guys are talking or davening, or something doesn't go well for me, and then the Olam doesn't sing this song, that's God's reality. God made that. Now, I don't understand it, because it's like Tzadik Varala. You know, I'm a Tzadik, and it's Tzadik Varala. But it's only Tzadik Varala if you're looking at yourself, if you're looking at all, somehow or another, for all of Klal Yisrael, this thing is part of the picture. Even though you can't figure it out, that someone talking next to you in davening, which is wrong, is part of the grand picture. But if you isolate it, you'll never be able to. If you isolate it, you'll never be able to figure it out, because it's wrong. It's uncomfortable. It's against halacha. But if you look at the God, it's a new reality. It's a new reality, and this reality is going to make it. You understand? This reality is going to make it. It's a fact. It happened. It's here. This is the reality. This is the reality. Tzadik Varala, Rosh HaVatayim, Israel is going to make it. And it's going to make it only this way. And it's not going to make it with any other way. It's not going to make it with Tzadik V'Tayvloi. And that won't bother you less. And you have to deal with it. You might have to talk to someone, you know. But you're dealing with it on a totally different level. So this is our avodah.